The readings for the fourth Sunday in Advent are Isaiah chapter 7, verses 10 through 16, Romans chapter 1, verses 1 through 7, and the Gospel of Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. And these readings can be found in the written version of the sermon on our website. Grace to you and peace from God our Creator and Christ our Wisdom. Amen. Love. According to a prominent theologian, love is a notoriously ambiguous weasel word. I didn't know what a weasel word was, but it didn't sound good, so I looked it up. A weasel word is a word or phrase that is used to create an impression that a meaningful statement has been made, but it's really only a vague or ambiguous claim. And I knew immediately what that meant. At an interfaith center meeting last week, we were trying to come up with a title for a new children's program. Someone suggested Interfaith Families for Peace. And someone else remarked, no, peace is such a meaningless word. I was shocked at first, but I had to agree with the reasoning behind it. I got it. Peace has also become a weasel word. How sad that two of the most important words in the church have become so trite. Two words that are so integral to this season. Although, with Strains a Silent Night, No Little Town of Bethlehem assaulting our ears in every store and restaurant, it's no wonder. I was sitting in Pete's on Thursday reading the news. In the background was Bing Crosby singing Silent Night, and I wanted to scream, "They're committing war crimes in Aleppo, you idiot!" But today is the fourth Sunday in Advent when we light a candle for love. And if it is going to be more than a weasel word, we have to be very intentional about what love is. But what is it? Despite the millions of poems and songs and works of art devoted to love, few actually define it. In fact, Jules Toner, who's the author of a book called The Experience of Love, said, "Those who write best about love devote very little space to considering what love is." But some have tried to get a better handle on this pervasive yet elusive crazy little thing called love. Some years ago, Leo Buscaglia, a professor in the Department of Special Education at USC, distressed by the suicide of one of his students, proposed to teach a course on the subject of love. Some of his fellow faculty members dismissed the subject as irrelevant. And one even mockingly asked whether the class would have a lab requirement, and with a leer asked Buscaglia if he would be the primary investigator. But Buscaglia was serious. This wasn't a frivolous thing for him. And he did get to teach the course, but only on the condition that he teach it for free in his spare time, and there would be no course credit given for it. But over the 3 years that followed, the course, which was not a scholarly or deeply philosophical study of love, but what he called a sharing of some of the practical and vital ideas, feelings, and observations related to the human condition, well, it earned Leo Buscaglia the name Dr. Love, and it became one of the university's most popular classes. Still, it was hard for those who were trained in more academic ways to get it. And he recounted that when he was asked to speak, he would usually be asked, "Now, will you talk about love?" "Sure," he'd say. And then they'd want to know, "Well, what's your title?" And he'd say, "Let's just call it love." And then there would be a brief hesitation, and then somebody'd say, "Well, you know, this is a professional meeting, and that might not be understood." So he would suggest affect as a behavior modifier, and they would be happy with that. Since then, there have been more scientific studies into love. One researcher, Thomas J. Ord, took a stab at it in his book with the very academic title, Defining Love, a Philosophical, Scientific, and Theological Engagement. His definition is, "To love is to act intentionally, in sympathetic response to others, including God, to promote overall well-being." That's pretty dry. Yet he and other researchers then identified 10 ways that love promotes well-being: celebration, respect, generativity, forgiveness, courage, humor, compassion, loyalty, listening, and creativity. It sounds a lot like our list of words that describe First United. But I think we can add another word to that list, vulnerability. We allow ourselves to be most vulnerable only with those we love. And even that's hard sometimes. To be so completely known by another can be a frightening thing. And some people who have been hurt by a loved one can be very wary of ever allowing their heart to be so open again. Yet that is what it takes to love and be loved, the daring risk to be vulnerable, and the willingness to hold the vulnerability of another. Maybe that's why we're so taken with the nativity myth. The idea that God would allow God's self to become as vulnerable as a newborn baby, that's an unusual view of divinity. When we think of divinity, we usually think in terms of almighty, all-powerful, majestic, omniscient, omnipresent, etc., etc. Certainly not weak, powerless, utterly dependent on others. So much like us, and frankly not us as we like to be reminded we are. So at Christmas, we're reminded of this great love, cosmic in its expansiveness, yet also so near to you and to me to be able to know the depths of our hearts, to laugh along with us in our joys and to suffer with us in our pains and sorrows. And this great love also resides in our hearts. And to the extent that we allow ourselves to acknowledge that, we are then able to extend love to ourselves and to others. And this love is not a weasel word. This is the real deal. And yes, love can have consequences. It can get us hurt. The life and death of Jesus is the ultimate example of the riskiness of vulnerability and openness to love. But there are many ways we might be called to pay the price for love. Yesterday, our banner went up outside of church, announcing to all who passed by that immigrants and refugees are welcome here. It took us a little while to get all of the Turk and Lion congregations on board with doing this, which was good. I didn't want us to put up merely a political statement, but as a real invitation to real people who may be very vulnerable in the coming months. Questions about what we are really equipped to do, what we're willing to do, what we know how to do, are important ones. Now, thankfully, we have a wonderful resource in Maria Eitz from the Sophia and Trinity congregation, who has contacts from her former parish who were involved in the sanctuary movement for Central American refugees in the 80s. And Maria is ready and willing to be part of the leadership of this movement, should we be called upon to act. And what we might be called upon to do is unclear. Yes, San Francisco is a sanctuary city. But a Chronicle headline this week warned of possible dangers ahead. The headline said, "The Sanctuary Battle, a Test of San Francisco's Soul." And it went on to say, "Now the question is whether Mayor Lee will have the same determination to defend the more than 44,000 immigrants living in San Francisco without documentation. All of them, including about 35% who are Asian, are at growing risk as the Trump administration prepares to take power. Lee staged a defiant press event in the City Hall Rotunda to affirm San Francisco's status as a sanctuary city, stating, 'We will always be San Francisco, a city of refuge, a city of sanctuary, a city of love.' Beautiful words," the article went on to say, "but many city officials and immigration advocates are wondering how strongly Lee will back them up, particularly as he grapples with a shrinking city budget and likely federal cutbacks." So we might be called upon to put ourselves out there in a way that goes beyond simply putting up a banner. Although by putting up that banner, we have made ourselves vulnerable as disciples of Jesus, as disciples of love. And you see that Mary and Joseph are on the banner as symbols of refugees, but I would add that they also represent the process of the presence of divinity being birthed into the world, a presence of infinite and intimate love. Why is God so often equated with love? That is no simple question. But Shakespeare knew in his heart what many have tried to express for millennia. Love appears to be a self-replenishing spiritual force beyond human understanding. As Romeo exclaims to Juliet in one of history's most famous love stories, "My bounty is as boundless as the sea, my love as deep. The more I give to thee, the more I have, for both are infinite." So for God, love is not a weasel word, nor is peace or hope or joy or justice. These words are real. They have power. These candles that we light on our Advent wreath are not flickers in an overwhelming darkness. They are beacons to the world. I saw a video message today from renowned biblical scholar John Dominic Crossan that said, "Caesars and Christs come in many different forms and sizes." We might feel intimidated by the power of empire. And there are reasons to be afraid. But we can also be heartened, encouraged, emboldened by the many forms that Christ will take in the midst of it. And those forms will sometimes be you and me and us. We are not weasel words. We will mean what we say and say what we mean. And tonight, we say, love wins. Amen.